Welcome, friends, to the Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye podcast, brought to you by your 26-year listening veteran, Jessica. Join me as we celebrate these enduring gifts, the songs of Marvin Gaye. In each episode, I will share insights about the music and recount life experiences tied to it. I'm hoping to inspire you to take a first or your 500th first listen to these songs that are truly the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye.
Good evening. Welcome to tonight's episode, Save the Children, from the What's Going On album, released 1971. The song is 4 minutes, 3 seconds long. Fourth song on the album. And it was written by Marvin Gaye, Al Cleveland, and Ronaldo Benson. Ronaldo Benson being a member of the Four Tops. And as I've been doing my research, I'm coming to see that Ronaldo Benson really is the one that framed the thought process of the song, What's Going On. That was something he came up with, like the premise of, after some recent events had gone on with kind of police brutality toward young people here in our country that were protesting likely the Vietnam War, right? Those types of situations could get violent back in those days. And so his kind of just reaction to that was to frame, you know, this question, what's going on, and wanting to put it into music. He shopped it around to several people, I'm hearing, like, and just like all around the world people. They weren't only at Motown people. And to, you know, I think he probably started with wanting his group, the Four Tops, to record it. He passed it around as an opportunity to several other artists. Nobody wanted to move forward with it. And he landed with Marvin. And I don't really even believe that Marvin at first wanted to do it either. Marvin wasn't recording. Hadn't been for a little bit, and we last episodes, right? He had been producing, and he was hibernating. So I can't really recall. I didn't get an impression that there was like this just totally an aha moment. Like, yes, you've convinced me. You know, I think that, you know, Marvin was just ready to get back into making music again. And, you know, I think this might have been a catalyst, you know, somebody just really encouraging him to, hey, I think you could really do something special with this song. And then I think that that was the catalyst that just kind of got the ball rolling for this entire album. So when I think of that guy, Ronaldo Benson, the only visual that I ever have of him, like, I think if you Google him, let me click on the link to him right now. They always show this picture. Yes, he's just this smiley guy, and you totally recognize who he is from the Four Tops. He's one of the three guys in the back that's always doing the little left to right swing, right? The hands up and the rocking side to side. That's the typical Four Tops move. But he's got a kind of a really round face and just a really, really friendly smile. And that's just the only impression that I ever have of Ronaldo, his name, Obi Benson. Anytime you see him in pictures for the Four Tops, he's just got the hugest, friendliest smile. And then when I looked up who Al Cleveland is, it was just an article saying that he was a writer for Motown. So he was a songwriter, but he had started out with the Scepter label and had some hits with Dionne Warwick and others. Then he moved to Motown, did a lot with the Miracles, and later they said he kind of like ended his career recording Native American music. Isn't that just an interesting tidbit? So when I give you that background on these individuals that were collaborating with Marvin on this particular song, Save the Children, right away, it's giving an impression of, yes, this is a sound environment, right? These are talented, songwriting, collaborative, nobody with some type of an ulterior motive thing going on. Like, Ronaldo Benson was happy to just hand over the bringing home, you know, bringing it to the finish line, his song What's Going On to Marvin. So there was just definitely something that worked for Marvin collaborating with these two to generate this song, because here would be my headline for the song Save the Children and this episode. Save the Children contains the only, and I will put that in capital, bold, underlined letters, O-N-L-Y, 20 seconds of Marvin Gaye that you, me, the world could handle. And I'm going to break that down. And I've struggled with exactly the words to use to frame what I'm going to break down. I think I'll be able to break it down better than I'm able to headline it. But it is to give the gist in a headline that this song contains 20 seconds of song of Marvin Gaye in his entire catalog in his life that he recorded for us. That he reveals a space for us that lasts for only 20 seconds. Where for 20 seconds, we are exposed, we are receiving, we are given a gift from Marvin Gaye at a level that I don't think he could expose all the... He couldn't expose that all the time. I have heard Marvin's catalog. I love anything that's the new unreleased that comes out. But what isn't unreleased, I've got and I've heard. There's 20 seconds in this song where Marvin Gaye reveals what he's working with, and we could never handle anything more than that. We couldn't even handle that level from Marvin beyond this 20 seconds. Marvin never put it on us like this ever again or before. So this song for me is that. It's the 20 seconds. So I just got home. Did I reveal? Let me just give you a little detail. Let me just put you where I'm at right now so that we're having this conversation together. It is 9:45 exactly p.m. on 7/16/2019. I just got home about an hour ago. Actually, before I brought my ass home, I went to go get some ice cream. It is July. It's hotter than July. Isn't that the name of Stevie Wonder's album, Hotter Than July? It's hotter than July outside. And what I had just been doing, because I needed to study this song so hard, again, I don't ever want to make this seem like a bragging thing. Please let me describe my baby. My Ford Mustang V8 red, candy red convertible is my life's achievement. I've had my aspiration set on achieving my car for 20 years, and I finally was able to make that happen. So whenever I mention my car, I know it is very aspirational, and it is for me. So there is not an ounce of me not being able to understand the blessing of my gift that I own at this point in my life that I took 20 years grinding to be able to get. So please don't ever hear me referring to my blessing with an impression that it is anything less than valued as that in my life. But that being the case, I'm just in this phase of blessing, right? I'm grown-ass woman, so I have finally kind of gotten to a place where some things have come into place, right? And what has just been giving me my life is being able to, after work, just take her out and get out into that country where there's... And why I choose to do that, there's not a lot of cars, there's no traffic, right? And it is just... Where I live, it's open and it's wide, and clouds are high up in the sky. That's the characteristic of the clouds in my sky. They're so high up in the sky. Even just states adjacent, the clouds are so low, and you feel like you could drive through them or you could maybe reach up and touch them. But here, our clouds are so high, and they're so monstrous. They're just, when by the time that I got home, this one cloud was like taking up the whole horizon. It was just this monstrous, massive thing. So I love to get out and be in these clouds. When I very first, at 14, was carrying on into this, into 15, and I will say 15, because that's when I had it on disc. So disc time in my ear, what's going on, 15, which would have made it 1994. It was in May. And May is just like the beginning of summer here. And I just always remember those clouds. It was just a May of those clouds. Blue sky and just those high, huge clouds. That's always my memory of where this journey on this album started for me. I would be in my headphones at every free moment of my time during the day back in those days. I remember this was when I was going into high school. And so high school was a different school, right? Like a physically different school. And actually, I'm trying to think about this. Was I 15 in high school? Yes. When I just started high school, I was late 15. And then early, still in the year, right, I turned 16, but yeah, when I was in 10th grade is when I went to high school. The way that our school system was is you had elementary, kindergarten to 6th, then you had junior high, 7th to 9th. And now I loved that structure. They should keep it that structure, and it hasn't been that structure. My class was the last class that they did it in that structure, but it worked for us. 9th grade allowed us, we were top dogs. We were top dogs. When we were in 9th grade, we were top dog of our school, and our physical school. We were the top dog, and that felt right. You know what I mean? You had achieved something. You were senior, right? In 9th grade, that's the right message to give to these kids. You know, don't make them feel punks and pipsqueaks and just picked on so soon. For us, it was an achievement, it was an accomplishment, we were big dog on campus, and we didn't go around bullying and abusing the younger kids we were looked up to. It was just this tight-knit little group of only 7th, 8th, and 9th. We were all in one school, just little three classes of kids, and it was an achievement to get to that 9th grade level, and that was a great school year for me. And then it made that transition into high school not so scary, because I don't care, you know what I'm saying? This was the reality. Once we switched over to the next physical school of high school, we were sophomores, though. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm sorry, when you're a sophomore, that's not the lowest, you know, portion on the totem pole. That, I just totally messed that up. That's not even a saying, right? The lowest position on the totem pole, but that still doesn't even really mean anything. But I think I've made my point, right? Like, we weren't the young pipsqueaks punks. We weren't picked on. We weren't picked on. And extra why we weren't picked on, like I said, literally, we were, my class was the last class that got to have that experience of our schooling, because the year that we went to our physical high school, so we left junior high, moved physically over to the high school, well, who came along with us were all of the little 8th graders that were turning into 9th graders. That was the first year that the high school was opening up to house the 9th graders as well. Because up to that point, our high school had only housed 10th, 11th, 12th. And extra why it wasn't a hard transition for us is because we literally were not the young ones in the school, because we had these little babies coming with us. And that was just really tough to see. They were so little. They were like physically so tiny. There were some of these children that were 9th grade coming into high school with us, and they were like physically so tiny. I was like, oh my gosh, these poor little children, you know, and they had a rough time. I will say, the year that I started college, so just the year after I left high school, so I went straight to college right after high school. The year that I left high school is the year that the first school shooting started popping off in this country. And so I'm of that generation, right? Like, I'm of these kids that just, where are they, right? Where in the world are they? And so for the fact that that happened, like, just the class right behind me, they were these little babies that came to school with us, and it just, it was, yeah. Ugh. So all of that is not a digression, kind of a little bit of digression. It actually all honestly feeds into Save the Children, right? But that was just, I was putting myself back into where I was listening to this album. And so why I went to high school like that, why I mentally went to high school like that, is because I do remember being on my campus, 10th grade, that first year, my first year in high school. And I was taking my portable CD player to school with me, along with those big ass headphones that I described at the very end of the last episode. And on our lunch breaks, I did have these two girls that I would usually, you know, kick it with for lunch break. At the very beginning of the school year, these were two girls that had come from my junior high with me, and I'd had classes with them a lot. You know, I'd had classes with them for the past 3 years, 7th, 8th, 9th grade. So I knew who they were, and we just happened to have the same lunch hour. So then we were bumping into each other at lunch, and it was like, okay, this is our free hour. Let's just hang out. We know who each other are. There's a lot of people here. There were a lot of people at our school, 2,000. And I don't know, maybe that's not as big as some, but it's not as small as others. So it was a big experience. And so just to kind of find two people that you knew in that mix of people, it was a little bit of comfort at first. But these girls weren't my close friends. They were just acquaintances. I just knew their faces out of a crowd, right? They really were not my friends. They weren't enemies, but I wasn't close with them. I had had a group of girls that I was closer with, in junior high, and I, you know, wasn't having a lunch break with them right now. So anyway, I would be, you know, in the presence of these two girls that I knew, but like I said, they weren't my friends and we weren't really close. And after a little bit, it became clear to me that like conversation wasn't really going to gel that well. And so the next thing I knew, and not to be rude, but just the next thing I knew, they were kind of more talking between themselves. It wasn't like, it was nothing negative, right? But it was just like, okay, we just know who each other are, and we're just finding a little bit of comfort in being in each other's presence right now. But I don't really feel the need to like engage in this kind of an interesting conversation. That's like, we're not having deep conversation here. So I'm going to slip my headphones on right now. And I would, while I was sitting there with them, put my headphones on and I would totally be into this disc, this album, just any song on the What's Going On album. So, and I would just really, I would leave their world and step into Marvin's. And I mean, like, I would completely not be able to hear them. And I would just be in their presence, but not, you know what I mean? And listening to this album. So that was like my typical experience. And then it just got to the point where, you know, this happened maybe 2-3 days at the very beginning of the school year, right? And then I was just more comfortable, like not needing to be sitting around people that I just knew but wasn't interacting with. It was more comfortable for me to actually just spend my lunch period more privately, you know, not with people around me and just kind of maybe them feeling a little bit awkward that I wasn't engaging in conversation. And I was just taking the time to listen to my music by myself. That was more my zhuzh. That was more my preference. That was more my, I'm comfortable doing this. So then there would always be the very long school bus ride home. And as much as I could, well, let me go back to this environment. I grew up with ruffians. I grew up with little wannabes, you know, wannabe gangsters, wannabe drug dealers, wannabe gang members, you know what I mean? Wannabe just little badasses. And then the school bus, right? Oh my God. I honestly, that is the worst experience of childhood for me, was school bus time. And it was my experience from, good gosh, was I taking the school bus since second grade? When I went to the same school district school system from the age of second grade until I graduated from high school. Before that, we had been in another school district school area. But then in second grade, we moved to where for just the rest of childhood, I grew up and was in the same school district and just flowing from one school to the next. So I'm pretty sure, yeah, I was riding the bus. My dad would always drop me off in the morning to the bus stop. But these kids were just horrific, dude. They were just awful, horrible little human beings. And it's just so sad the way that, you know, bad people raise bad kids, right? I just would be called the N-word to my face. It was just, it was very volatile, just always on the verge, right? In being in an experience like that, you as the person in that experience feel constantly that you are always on your verge of what's going to be the straw that breaks my back. And then I have to flip the fuck out on these fools. You know what I mean? Like, it was that experience my entire childhood, because it was so confrontational and just in my face, rocks being thrown at me, you know, just constantly being verbally abused, witnessing other people getting into physical altercations. Just, it was just, it was a heinous experience. And the school bus was where it all went down, dude. By the time that I was in high school, the school bus ride was over an hour long because we went so far. We went around the county, it felt like, dropping everybody off. And, but for the most part, I'm knowing that I wouldn't take my ears off of those motherfuckers. So I know that I didn't have my headphones on to be kind of like blocking out the sound of all of those motherfuckers around me. I needed to keep my ears on them. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't allow myself to not be able to be fully aware of my surroundings. It was that type of an environment and situation. And so finally, though, the only time where it was kind of like, fuck, you know, it was like when I got to my bus stop, right? Like when I finally got to my bus stop. And then from there, I had a mile walk home. And there, that was when. Now, once I was off of that shit, you know, and out of that environment, and nobody walked home with me, definitely during that time, the headphones were on and I'm listening to whatever of Marvin Gaye. But mostly at that point in time, it was the What's Going On album. So again, that just puts me into, now I'm outside, right? Like I'm walking for a mile. And we lived in, like I have mentioned this before, in the Shadow of Your Smile episode, I did shout this out because this was a humongous characteristic of my neighborhood, just very steep hills. We lived in a very hilly, very steep hilled neighborhood. And so, in my mile long walk home, that's a good 25 minutes. I got pretty athletic doing it, you know what I'm saying? So it didn't take me a really long time. I got good at walking up those hills. But, you know, that is literally, you're out, you're breathing fresh air, and I'm seeing these clouds of May, right? Just these May, springtime, high, beautiful clouds. So that's really just always the environment that I remember listening to this album in the very beginning with it in my ear. And so, you know, any time that I can kind of replicate those surroundings to be into this music, it's about study for me. So that's what I did tonight. I put the top down. I got out into the country, and I was just surrounded by these clouds and the blue sky. And so that was the environment that I needed. And honestly, it took me about an hour to just really get the gists of the breakdowns of the song. Opera was in my mind. At one point, I'm listening to Marvin deliver this song, and I was like, this is an opera. He is singing here's why I went to opera. The Grammys, the year that Aretha Franklin, last minute, night of the Grammys, steps in for, what is this guy's name? Pavarotti, is that how you say his name? He was supposed to perform at the Grammys and whatever. I don't remember what is the reason that he wasn't able to be there, but he wasn't able to perform. And so last minute, night of, guess who's able to just step in and do all of that shit? Aretha Franklin, right? Guess who else could have done it? I know. Marvin. You know what I mean? He's singing this song, and it's opera. It's also high as well. I love to just, let me get at the background vocals. I just love to just take the background. And it is so high. Like there's, and so is What's Happening, Brother. I will be in the car with my sister sometimes. We're driving along. She's been hearing this album most of her life. If I was 15, she was 6. So she's been hearing this album most of her life. And she knows, whether, you know, she chooses to or not, she knows it by heart. And I'll say to her sometimes, I'll be like, sis, come on, let's sing this part. And she'll be like, I can't sing it. I can't sing that high. Marvin takes it very high. It's an opera. Like, these ladies in the background, dude, they're up there. They're up there. I'm not even going to attempt to do it right now because I won't hit it. But, you know, it's all the way up. And he's not singing in his highest falsetto, but he is singing la 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 la. I was part of this reading around I was doing, they said that this was one of the first, if not the first album that Motown released where they included lyrics in the album. And they were saying that Marvin, so hold on, here's how I'm gonna break this down. I'm going to reference my Pinterest page, right? And it's Pinterest. Just look up the Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye, and you're going to find me on Pinterest. Let me go there for 1 second so I can give you the exact address. I mention it, it's in my outro of every episode, but it is, once I logged in right there, it still wasn't at my address. Okay, so it's pinterest.com/MarvinGaye_enduring_gifts. I have a board that is called, let me get to my board. It's called Marvin Gaye, Actor, Oh Hell Yes. Because in 1971, Marvin went to LA, Los Angeles, to film a movie. And he's an actor in this movie, and you need to watch this movie. And I have the movie on my Pinterest page, so you can watch it. And the name of this movie is Chrome and Hot Leather. And Marvin Gaye is in the movie from start to finish, and he has speaking lines, and he is an actor. And you need to see Marvin Gaye acting. So you can not take your eyes off of him for a single scene that he is in. And he is in that movie from start to finish. And he even kicks ass towards the end of that movie. So you, please, get your life and watch Chrome and Hot Leather, which was made in 1971. Which, as I mentioned, What's Going On was recorded in 30 days. And I cut myself off from finishing that thought in the previous episode. But it was to say that a conversation happened between Marvin Gaye and Berry Gordy, to where it was on Berry's part supposedly saying that, all right, if we are going to move forward with releasing this album and you like making an album in this vein, get it done. I'll give you 30 days to get it done. And, you know, can you do it? And so he did. He busted it out in about 30 days. Well, here's some interesting stuff. I'm glad I'm thinking of this right now. So Marvin, as he's wrapping it up, right, like he's needing to get out to Los Angeles to start filming this movie, because it's literally happening in the same time frame. Like, What's Going On is not finished. It's not completely wrapped up, packaged up, pressed out on albums and in the album cover and out on shelves yet before he's needing to be in LA to start recording this movie. So part of the article that I referenced in the previous episode, whatever, I've already disparaged that article enough, right? I don't need to, I won't do it anymore. But part of what that article told me is that basically the album had been approved, signed off on by Marvin, right? And it was supposed to be like, okay, now we've got this. I think of it like in doing my work, right? There has to be a stop. Pencils have to be put down. That's what we call it. Pencils down. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's got to come a point where we have to stop, because it has to get into reproduction. It has to get made. Okay. We can't be messing with this anymore. So it was at that point, you know, and evidently Marvin had been good with it and he was done and he'd taken his hands off of it and they were supposed to be able to have it to start getting it made into records. But as he was heading out to Los Angeles to make this movie, he snagged all of the materials. They call it the masters. That's what I heard it referred to. He snagged the masters and he took it with him because he wasn't done, right? He wasn't done and it was his, so he fucking wasn't done. So he took it with him out to Los Angeles. And what happened when he did that, and I learned what this instrument is called, it's a mellotron. He had just gotten his hands on this instrument called a mellotron. And what he did is, once he had these masters with him out in Los Angeles, so that in Detroit, Motown was not able to get started pressing out the album, he got with his, the Motown engineers out in Los Angeles, and he gets his hands on this instrument called a mellotron. And what he does is he changes Mercy, Mercy Me, because he, Marvin Gaye, adds in the mellotron that we hear at the end of Mercy, Mercy Me. And honestly, is that not the most defining, most recognizable element of that song, right? Anybody recognizes and knows that that is Mercy, Mercy Me by the ending of the song. Do, 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 do. That's a mellotron. Marvin had changed his mind that he wasn't ready to hand it over, snagged his product, took it with him out to Los Angeles, and decided he needed to add that mellotron to Mercy, Mercy Me. Thank you, right? Like, that's what makes that song. That's like the defining aspect of that song. So, I got on that tangent right now because you have got to see the movie Chrome and Hot Leather. Marvin is an actor in that movie, and he's in it from start to finish. He has speaking lines. He has his own scenes. Get your life and watch that movie. And it is on my Pinterest board. Marvin Gaye acting in a movie, Chrome and Hot Leather, 1971. So yes, literally, he hasn't let go of What's Going On for it to physically be pressed out onto vinyl records before he is out in Los Angeles starting to film this movie, Chrome and Hot Leather. That's another reason to watch this movie. You're gonna be like, oh my gosh, Marvin Gaye, that's what he looked like right when he was still putting the finishing touches on What's Going On. They said that he had already grown his beard, his full beard, but he had to shave it off for this movie. So that's like also probably one of the last times that you'll ever see Marvin clean shaven. It's just you, if you, I'm not even going to be able to invite you back to my podcast if you don't watch this movie. I mean, come on. Like, who are you if I've told you that Marvin Gaye acted in a movie and possibly you hadn't already seen that and you are not, like, needing to maybe even pause this episode to go watch that movie. But as far as, and of course I jest, but when I just now said that about inviting to listen to my podcast, I'm actually going to my podcast dashboard right now because I have to just shout to you guys and just thank you so much. We are around the world. And this just speaks to me, the volumes that it speaks to me about the love that Marvin Gaye has around the world to this day. And that's exactly, I thank you. I thank you for getting it. I thank you for loving Marvin Gaye with me, right? Thank you for loving Marvin Gaye with me. And I you know, maybe you were even thinking if I'm saying, like, who am I to thank you? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't need to thank you. Maybe you need to thank me. So, but I thank you for sharing this space with me in love with Marvin Gaye, for Marvin Gaye. So I'm shouting you out in Germany, Australia, the Philippines, Japan, Ecuador, Canada, and the Netherlands. I love you. Thank you. Yes, I'm here for it. This is what it's all about. I understand it. You understand it. I get it. We get it. So here's one thing that I would just also call to action to you guys. Spread the word. Tell five people. You know, get everybody on this movement, right? I want this to be a movement of love of Marvin Gaye. And it really just goes back to what I explained about Marvin Gaye is joy on demand. He provides joy in this life, in these times, on demand. And that's a necessary weapon to have in your toolkit in this day and age, is an ability to bypass and surpass circumstances and tap into your joy that cannot be touched and taken away from you. Yeah. I'm glad that you get it with me. So, Save the Children. I was out in the country with the top down tonight, and I was listening to this song over and over and over again because I just needed to get it. And so I mentioned opera. I got opera. I get these ladies in the background singing opera. I get Marvin singing opera. So, and let me finish a thought. Why I got off onto the tangent about he was out in Los Angeles filming this movie and that the album What's Going On, if not the first, is one of the first that is released by Motown where the lyrics are included. Well, Marvin is out in Los Angeles and the lyrics are needing to be given to someone back in Detroit so that it can get given to whoever's going to print the album covers to put the lyrics into it. And so the way that this happened is that Marvin was on the phone singing. He literally sang his album to an administrative professional that was in the Motown studios. And she was typing up as Marvin was singing to her on the phone so that she could get the lyrics. And so she is literally just transcribing exactly what Marvin is singing to her on the phone. But an element of opera about that is like, and why this song gives me opera is because Marvin literally sings in the song, and this woman that was on the phone with him literally transcribed into the lyrics, and what you can read on the inside of the album cover is la 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 la. I feel like that is one of the very few times, I'm not convinced that it is the only time, but I know it is one of the very few times where Marvin is so into the song, so into song, that lyrics of the song are la 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 la. But isn't that the most adorable? And isn't that opera? Isn't that that reminds me, Figaro, 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 la 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 la. So la 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 la. He's so into song that lyrics of this song are that, are la 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 la. That's opera, right? That's not opera. So opera was, I was getting opera as I was heading back home. Really where I was getting my biggest focus and where I was able to just really, really stay focused. Because the farther that I was driving out, the more and more it was just open country, less and less traffic and less people around me. When I was coming back, I was at opera. Marvin literally is speaking to us in this song. I do believe that this song is one of the first times, if not the first time, I would love for someone to be able to put me in check, put me in some Marvin Gaye check to show me where is the song before this one, where Marvin Gaye is speaking in the song, where like he's just speaking. And it grabbed me the degree to which Marvin is speaking. Marvin starts out the song speaking. I tried to put myself back into very first moments of listening to this song. And yeah, I achieved that at a portion of my drive tonight, of hearing Marvin starting off this song and listening to it as from a place of not knowing what to expect, right? Like a first time hearing this song and you don't know what to expect. You don't know what's coming next. And for the fact that literally once Marvin begins to provide vocal to this song, he is doing that via his speaking voice. And so I don't even know. Yeah, I'm so serious that in a song, not a TV interview, you know, not after he's just finished lip singing on some show, but in a song that we are just hearing Marvin Gaye speaking up to this point in his career. Because I feel like he does it again in Hear My Dear, right? I feel like in literally the song Hear My Dear, that doesn't he speak? I feel like he speaks and sings in that song. But that's much, much later than this. And so the times before, I just really don't know that in song we've heard Marvin Gaye's speaking voice. You know, and put it for me, right? Listening to this album for the first time when I'm 15, well, unfortunately, Marvin's passed away. I haven't grown up watching Marvin speaking on TV after he's just given some type of a lip singing or live singing, because he definitely sang live a lot of the times too on these shows. It was up to probably the show's format, right? Like, do they have people lip singing or are they live singing? But, you know, like, I didn't grow up being able to see Marvin performing on these shows growing up to where I would have heard his speaking voice. So I remember, somehow I achieved as I was driving tonight, hearing him speaking like that. I was focusing so much on just studying the song. And it was like, wow, Marvin comes into this song giving vocal in his voice. He's just speaking. And then from there, he gets into singing. And let me explain. I've jotted down, this is the first time ever, guys, that I've jotted down some notes. Don't get used to it. This is a story. Marvin is telling us a story in this song. That's why this is an opera. What is the definition of an opus? A symphony? This song is in the same vein, and guess what? It's on the same album as our last episode song, Right On, right? Marvin was writing symphony. Martha Reeves explained that to us, that this album is Marvin's symphony. Towards the end of his life, Marvin explained that he was writing an opera, a symphony. He was calling it Life's Opera. It is available on, what album is that on? It's the album that CBS Records released after his death, which was like material that he was working on after Sexual Healing, didn't get to finish, but he was working on an opera, and he had been working on this opera for many, many, many years, just kind of down. And Marvin made many operas in his life. We'll explore them, okay? I'm going to be able to use the word opera many times to you in description of Marvin Gaye's work, okay? Let's go there. Let's call it that. Why is Marvin's work not an opera, okay? I need you to tell me why it's not. So it is. So this song is a story. It's an opera. And he comes in with his speaking voice. And honestly, what the name of this song could be, equally as it could be called Save the Children, is Who Really Cares? Because he repeats that question over and over and over again throughout that song. And he breaks your heart with that question. So he starts out in his speaking voice, which for me was the first time that I was hearing Marvin Gaye's speaking voice, because I had not had a lot of access to Marvin Gaye not singing prior to this. This was my first, I'm pulling this album off of my family's collection of music. And because it's in this house, I don't have to go babysit so that I can get little teenage money to go have some adult take me to a music store so that I can be overwhelmed by the selection, because I don't know Marvin Gaye's catalog yet and I don't know where to start. But there was something known about this album, which was the song Mercy, Mercy Me. I had already tried to play this album a couple of years prior, and got stuck on the song Flying High in the Friendly Sky. So I had to put it back for about a year, because I was 13 when I first tried to listen to this album, and I got stuck. I couldn't really get past Flying High in the Friendly Sky. And, but now I was doing this, we were in it to win it, and it was going to go down, it was going down, you know what I'm saying? So I was listening to this album, and I was in it to win it. By the time that I was pulling this album off at 14 and I was actually going in, I already knew the barrier of Flying High and the Friendly Sky. I already knew that I didn't quite understand that song a year before when I had first tried to hear it. But I knew that I needed to get past that, and I just needed to figure it out. I needed to figure it out, right? And I needed to keep it moving and just hear everything on this album. So this was the album that, was starting it all for me. And Save the Children, it's my first time hearing Marvin Gaye speak. And everything else aside, nothing about the monumentalness of this entire album, and let's just focus on that. This song is a very unique delivery, period, of the combination of the singer's speaking voice and singing. And tonight, what I really received from Marvin was that he was telling a story. Literally as if he was like reading us a story. And that would be the reason why we are hearing Marvin speaking, reading the words, right? Because until minute 2:39 in this 4-minute and 3-second long song, Marvin is speaking to us throughout from second zero until the last time that we hear Marvin using his speaking voice is at minute 2:39. Up and through that 2:39, Marvin is speaking to us and he is telling us a story. And really, the place that Marvin Gaye takes me with the words that he is speaking and the story that he is telling is into the future, into the time of revelations. That's where I'm at. Those are the visions that I'm seeing. The picture that Marvin is painting to me is describing revelations to me. You can go wherever that takes you, but for me, that's where I'm at with it. And what I get is that Marvin is showing us how it is possible to interpret words. He speaks them. And then he shows us how they can come to life when immediately after he sings them. And I was listening to this experience. And he is speaking these words. And this is where it's like, I don't give a fuck if he wrote this song with 50 other people, 500 other people. If I don't give a fuck if this was a song that was We Are the World. Do you know what I'm saying? That song, We Are the World, where there's like 500 people that perform on that song. I don't give a fuck if that many people wrote this song with Marvin Gaye. The experience of this song and what Marvin is showing you and what he's doing is he is reading you his work immediately in the moment, followed by singing you his work. And there is a way that his work is driven home to you with that delivery method. And that's the reason why I'm saying Marvin is literally showing us how it is possible to interpret words. Because words can just be flat and they can be stagnant and they can be stale. And they sometimes cannot be the most effective way to deliver one's message, right? And Marvin is speaking his words. And you know what, though? Why it is so very effective with Marvin speaking his words is because, like I said, it's a unique delivery approach to a song, to literally in your song. You're just speaking. You're not singing. You're just speaking. And I think like that really drives home Marvin's message because we're hearing his speaking voice. And so, yeah, somebody of the time that grew up on Marvin, you know, catching him every opportunity that they could on any TV performances that he was making, they've heard his speaking voice before up to that point. But, you know, kind of even regardless of that, we haven't really heard Marvin's, for a song long speaking voice in a song. I would love somebody, please tell me, what is the song? I would love to know that. But that is the fact that he is kind of as much speaking in the song as he's singing in the song is driving home the message of his song. But this is my point on saying that I don't care how many people he co-wrote this song with. What makes this song all Marvin's song is, and that what he's showing you that
only a gifted singer can do, is that you take spoken words and you sing them and bring them to life.
Marvin Gaye is showing us how it's possible to interpret words, because literally what he is doing in one song, that's why this song is an experience like none other. And here's something also. I was thinking of this on my drive home. I was pretty close to home when I was having these thoughts occur to me. It's, you know, I've mentioned this before and I'm very proud of this. I'm going to, you know, say this as like a bragging thing. I don't listen to a ton of other musicians. Okay. I can guarantee it. There's no other musician whose work I know to the degree that I know Marvin's. There's no other musician that I love to the degree that I love Marvin. So, and I say that in a bragging way, but you know, so something that occurred to me though, is that being the case, that I don't know, like, thoroughly back and front a ton of other artists like the degree to which I know Marvin Gaye, I know that it's possible that there are other artists from that time that could have done similar things, right? Or, you know, that something that Marvin Gaye did was not the first time that it was ever done, right? But here's the thing that I don't really give a fuck about, and it's like, so what if somebody else did something similar or did something first? Marvin Gaye did it. And if it has to be a Marvin Gaye did it too type of thing, then fine. And guaranteed, though, like, when he did it too, there's no comparison to his to someone else's. You know what I mean? And that's what it is. That's what's like, that's being in a game, right? That's being in the music game. That's being in the whatever game that you're in, the game of life. You know what I'm saying? It's like, whatever game you're in, there's doing you. And that's just the thing about it. Like, once Marvin did his thing, the end. There's just nothing else that compares to something that Marvin did. Even if Marvin did something that someone else did, that something else that someone else did doesn't compare to what Marvin did. The end. So, you know, I'm saying that for Marvin. I'm not saying that Marvin had that opinion of himself. I'm saying that for Marvin. Because I was thinking of this song, and I'll go back to what I'm just explaining about the delivery of the song. And I don't know, did somebody else ever, and maybe even at the same time, and maybe in that phase of time of music, did people make songs like that where they did a combination of speaking and singing? I don't give a fuck, dude. Marvin did it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the reason why it's like, I don't really care who his peers were that did things too. Guess what? Marvin Gaye did it. And that's all that I give a fuck about. You know, it's like, that's it. So that's where I'm coming from with this podcast. You know what I'm saying? I'm not here to not show respect to other people, but I'm here for Marvin only. Because for me, I've stated this logo few episodes back. I feel it's really time to resurrect it. Only Marvin will do. Okay? So, yeah. But that's enough is said right there. But that explanation out of the way, let me get back to my point here that, you know, this song has a very unique delivery approach, and speaking it is driven home because we're hearing Marvin Gaye's speaking voice combined with the singing of it. But then Marvin could have been, this is where I've made this point before. Marvin could literally be singing the phone book and he could do this, because that is what he is doing in the song. Marvin is speaking his words. It is literally as if Marvin has taken a book off of a shelf. It's like we're children, you know, sitting around for story time. Did you ever used to go to the library? Did you ever used to be in preschool and have a teacher
that read you books. Have you ever read books to little children, right? Like it's a very fascinating thing. It is a transporting you to another world type of thing. And that is what Marvin is doing in this song. He is telling us a story and he is reading the story to us. Okay. And so he does that with his speaking voice. We are being read a story by Marvin in this song. And then what Marvin does, and this is where this song is just completely Marvin's. This is my point to say, I would not give a fuck if Marvin wrote this song with 500 other people. It becomes 100% Marvin Gaye, because he is taking words and he immediately shows us his interpretation of those words. That was the first time ever in my life, was tonight when I was listening to this song out in the country, hundreds of miles out into the country. I was like, wow, Marvin Gaye is showing me the way that Marvin Gaye took these words and interpreted them. Now, they are 1/3 Marvin Gaye, right? But they are also 2/3 two other people. And that's what makes it important, is because that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't give a fuck if it was 1/500th Marvin Gaye as far as who wrote those words. It becomes 100% Marvin Gaye because in the moment he is showing you the way that he sings and decides to interpret how he is going to sing these words, these spoken words. And that is something that only Marvin Gaye could give us for this song. He has given us a song where it's like, who cares how many people wrote this song? He wrote it. He wrote it with other people. But he is interpreting it with the song, the singing of the song, in a way that only he could do. I mean, it is literally the way that he speaks these words, and then he'll come through and he sings every single word that he just spoke, but he'll put emphasis on the smallest word. He'll put emphasis on the, you know what I'm saying? And you're just like, oh my gosh, that's how he decides to sing. That's how he decided to sing those words. And there is just something about the message of this song that is driven home so hard and so effectively and so completely, because we get it from him being spoken and sung in tandem, concurrently, at the same time, moment to moment, back to back, touching each other. It's just, that's what I'm saying. It is an experience like none other. And this is what I'm saying. I don't know. Have other people delivered songs like that? I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Marvin Gaye did it. So that's the experience of the song. I made a note and I was touched by the fact that he opens up. This becomes his opera. We're starting to get the strength of his singing at 1:10. At 1:10, he really hits it hard. It's becoming opera at that point. And I noted that at 1:26 is the first time that I hear him make reference to the children, right? Which is what the title of the song is, Save the Children. So at 1:26, he's kind of inserting the children into this revelations scene that he has created in his story. And all of a sudden, as soon as he puts those children into the story, and let me go back to what I said, the title of this song could just as easily be as Save the Children. The title could just as easily be Who Really Cares? And he is painting this picture for us of what our planet is going to become. And to me, that is in the time of revelations. And all of a sudden, at 1:26 into painting this picture, he inserts the children. And he's asking us up to this point, who really cares? Who really cares to save the world? That's what he's... Who cares to save this world? And then he inserts the children. And what this song has always done for my heart, at the point that the children become inserted, is that, like, something is breaking inside of me and something is also turning on inside of me, right? It's like there's a breakdown of, like, I almost can't take this picture that you're painting anymore because it's enough for me to think of myself going through that, right? But I almost can't take it anymore when you insert the children into it, Marvin. My God, what are you doing to me right now? You know what I mean? And then the light turning on is that all of a sudden, this is where the motivation for doing what you have to do comes into play. Because the reason is the children. I'm going to explain children. I don't have children. And that's a life choice, okay? My lifestyle is more conducive to not having children. And that's just a choice that I am in my own skin about. That's not, don't worry about me. You know what I'm saying? That has been a deliberate choice. But I have these children around me anyway. And guess who they are? They're the children of my sisters. So they are my babies still anyway. You know what I mean? When my sisters and I were children ourselves and we were growing up, little girls growing up together, we would sit around and talk about the days when we would be able to have children. And I don't know why. Don't ask me why, but it was innate in all three of us. For some reason, all three of us wanted to have boys. They're just, for some reason, it was like a boy, you know? And my sister has a girl and I love my niece. We, you know, it wasn't that like we wouldn't love our daughters if we had them, but it was just like a boy, you know? And so I am so happy for both of my sisters. They both got to have their little boys. And I know that their little boys are just like the light of their lives, dude. And their little boys are the light of my life. But babies, right? Babies are the most pure experience that you will have on this planet. And I think especially so when you get to be who I am, which is Auntie, because I don't have to do every single thing about raising them, right? I get to have breaks from them. So that allows our experiences and our little interactions to be completely of a certain experience, right? It doesn't have to be about, you know, all of it doesn't, I'm not a parent. I don't have to be their parent. I get to be Auntie. So anyway, just to paint the picture of babies though, and what babies are. There's like, and I can start with painting you this picture and then I'm going to relate it to a baby's. Butterflies, right? Isn't it very, very special? Like if a butterfly ever lands on you, right? That's just like this is a lucky moment. Wow, some type of a blessing is about to come my way. Something really good is about to happen to me. A butterfly just landed on me. So one day, I was at my sister's house outside in the backyard playing with my little boy. And I love to go there with him because I just play with him. I love to allow myself at 40 years old to get into the mind space of being able to play with my little 2-year-old boy. And so we were out in the backyard and I was laying in, just flat out laying in the grass with him. I think that might have been the first time that anybody was ever laying down in grass with him, because I was showing him the clouds. I wanted him to see how the clouds are always moving. So I didn't take the time to go get a blanket first and lay that out, which I would have appreciated. Like, actually, you know, once I got it, I was like, wow, I would have really rather have you know, that's not playing though, right? If I would have been so focused on I needed to go get a blanket first, that's not playing with him. So I was just playing, but like, I really wanted him to be able to experience that, because that's what me and his mom and his auntie used to always do. When we were little girls, we used to always lay down and just look at the clouds and tell each other what we saw in the clouds. So I was doing that with him. And then he wanted to go play bubbles. He wanted to blow bubbles. And he ran around the corner of his little backyard. And I was like, where is he going? So I had to follow him really quickly, because he was running away. I was like, where is he going? But he had also just said bubbles to me. And I was like, about the bubbles, dude. Like, I really wanted to do the bubbles too, because we've done bubbles a lot before. But then he was running away, and I was like, where is he going? Well, he knew he was going straight to where the bubbles were. He's so adorable. So he was running away fast down the yard, and then he turned the corner, and that's when I was like very quickly needing to be right behind him, because I did not know where he was going out of my sight. So I got right up to him really quick, and he was already reaching as high over his little head as he could, because that's how much higher than it was from him. The bubbles were up on this table, on the edge of a table, and he was like almost on his little tiptoes, arms as high over his head as they could be, trying to put his little hands on the edge of the bubble. And if he would have grabbed it, you know, it would have fallen, you know, right on his head. So I had to come and grab that for him. But he was going to go get the bubbles, right? So I grabbed the bubbles, and I was like, okay, let's go do this. So we were playing with the bubbles. And, you know, I somehow in this experience, the main thing I was able to do, and I wasn't trying, right? You know, bubbles are very difficult. They're hit and miss, right? Like, and is there a method to like consistently being able to blow bubbles? Because I would like try and blow, and sometimes nothing would come out. But then most of the time, if anything came out, I was being able to give him these just one like really big bubble. And so every single one, as soon as it popped, right away, do it again. Do it again. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just there. I could have done that with him for a year. And every single one that popped, he would have just, with the same intensity of excitement, been telling me, do it again. We're doing this for a while, right? We probably did do it for more than half an hour. And at one point, I'm sitting in the grass, right? Because I'm letting him just go chase them wherever they go. And at a certain point, he just comes up and he puts his little foot on my leg. And he's wearing little sandals, and he puts his foot. And so I kind of looked at him, and I was just like, why do you have your foot on me? You know, like, don't put your little shoe on me. But I didn't shush him, you know, move him away. I was kind of like, why is this little boy putting his foot on me? And you know what, too? There's something about my little nieces and nephews. They like to put their feet on me. Like, they do that. They get real comfortable with me. And the next thing I know, they're putting their feet on me somehow. So that was the reason why I was just kind of like, I think it was kind of more like, why are these babies always just putting their feet on me? So he just had his little foot on my leg, and I let it be. I let it be, and I just kept blowing the bubbles. In 2 seconds, I wasn't even noticing that he had his little foot on me like that. But here's what I'm talking about, butterflies. You know how just all of a sudden, if a butterfly just flies on you? The next thing I knew, my baby, and this is the experience of babies, dude. We're blowing the bubbles, they're going everywhere. And the next thing, just on his own, my baby, he just sat himself down on my lap. I was like, oh my gosh, it's like even better than a butterfly landing on me. My baby just decided, just, you know, he didn't ask, he didn't tell me he was about to do it. And the next thing I know, I was just being sat on by a little baby. You know what I'm saying? Save the children, dude. Save them. So this is the reason why at 1:26 into this song where he inserts the children, that's why I'm like, something breaks and something turns on. Because it's like you almost can't hear the scene of this song anymore that he has been painting, the picture of Revelations, once he puts those children into it. But then at the exact same time, that becomes your total motivation for like, okay, what do we have to do? And this is my motivation for doing what I have to do to save this world. The reason is the children. And then, and I didn't get the second that he says this, but shortly after he says, you know, he inserts the children, he is telling us that, you know, it's like it's nobody's fault because we can't stop living. But then he makes this statement, and this is really a revelation of who Marvin was as a person, too. He says, but let live everybody. And that really so much reveals who Marvin was as a person. If you have an impression of Marvin Gaye, right? He's not, and he was not this really, and so hold on. Before I go any further, I'm of course speaking in the vein in which I know Marvin, which is through his music. I'm not going to give an impression that I ever had a conversation with Marvin Gaye and so that I could know fully who he was as a person. I know some people that knew him as a person, they try and kind of push that back sometimes. Well, you know, people think they might know. It's like, okay, fine. Let's don't go there. But you know him anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I'm also not going to allow somebody that did know Marvin Gaye closely take away from me is what I know that I also know about Marvin Gaye through his music. I'm sorry. You're not taking that away from me either, though. Okay? So we just have to, it's two sides of a fence. And I fully have access to my side of the fence. Okay? And I know what I'm talking about on what's on my side of the fence. So what from Marvin Gaye's music you get to know of him as a person is that you can really just, you get a sense that let live everybody was a true attitude that he really had about people in the world. Marvin Gaye was really able to just be with people, talk to people. I hope that by now you've had an opportunity to watch that movie, Remember Marvin Gaye, which is on my Pinterest video board. But a perfect scene from that movie that is what I'm talking about is he's walking down the street in Ostend, Belgium. Yay, I said it correctly. And he goes into some little tavern and it's full of people from Ostend, Belgium, right? Where has Marvin ever seen these people before? Where have they ever seen Marvin Gaye before, right? And he just goes into this tavern. He starts having a conversation with these people, right? He's just checking them out and they're checking him out. And, you know, he's black and have they ever even seen a black man before in their little tavern? You know what I'm saying? But, like, that's not a barrier. And they full on have a conversation. The funniest part about this all of a sudden. I hope you've seen this. One of the guys that Marvin's standing there at the bar talking to, just all of a sudden the guy says to Marvin, he's like, where are you from, Paraguay? Marvin is like, I think the man kind of asks him first, where are you from? And then Marvin says Los Angeles. And then kind of right as Marvin is saying Los Angeles, the guy throws out there, Paraguay. Marvin, he says Los Angeles, and then right away he's like, Paraguay? He's like, I don't even, Marvin, he's like, Paraguay? He's like, where's Paraguay? He's like, I don't even know where Paraguay is. He was like, no. He's like, I'm from Los Angeles. But it's just like, that's Marvin Gaye, right? Like, live and let live. Like, I just don't feel like Marvin Gaye really had a problem with anybody, right? So I really do, I just get the impression that that is really and truly who Marvin was as a person, and that it was his attitude to just let live everybody. At minute 2:23, is where this song really
fully becomes about the children. And so from minute 2 and 23 seconds until minute 2 and 39 seconds, it's children, the children, the children. And the last time that Marvin speaks in the song is at minute 2 and 39 seconds. That's the last time that we hear him speak. And really what he was just saying is, let's save the children. So he's done speaking at that point. And what he does, and this is the opera, is from there, it's like, okay, he's been showing you there's two ways to deliver a message, right? Through his speaking voice and then the interpretation of spoken words into song. And all of a sudden, Marvin's gonna just like drive it all the way home. He starts to take over. And from minute 2 and 40 seconds through minute 3 and 4 seconds, he takes over with the singing. He's gonna drive it all the way home now. He can't speak to you anymore. He's gotta sing to you now. That's where the power is. That's where his power is. And he takes over for the rest of the song into singing. For the rest of this opera, he is singing. And he starts to call them babies. And Marvin, what are you doing to me? Because I know about babies. A baby came and sat on me like a butterfly. Okay, so this is all the reason to save the world. And he's calling them the babies now. And I just can't even take this anymore. And so he's building and building and building. And this thing is just a full-on opera. And then at 3 minutes and 7 seconds, he comes all the way down. He comes all the way down. And he goes all the way back to the very, 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 very beginning of this song. And he asks you the question, which easily could be the title of this song as well. And he's right back to asking, but who really cares? And it's like, Marvin, you have just broken my heart with these babies. And you have the nerve to just, and you took me to the top. You took me to the mountaintop with you. And then at 3 minutes and 7 seconds, you just stopped and you've let me back down to, I can't take this, because you're right back to asking me this question of who really cares. And now he's just singing and there's no more speaking and he's broken your heart. And then he takes you to heaven. We are now getting to the headline of this song, which is what I said, that this song contains, and this is how I don't even really know the words to use, so I'm going to say it several ways and then see if I drive home my point, but really I don't need to drive anything. I'm going to tell you, get to your song, get to your headphones, get into this song, and get to minute 3 and 41 seconds. And from 3 and 41 seconds until 3 and 43 seconds is heaven on earth. It's heaven on earth. And if you somehow in college, my freshman year in college, I don't know why this happened one night, but it did. I was in bed. I was in my dorm in college. And I've never explained this, but my sister points this out to me all the time because this was the way I used to always do. I can't really do it so much anymore, but from 15 until college, so I was 18, 19, I could not go to bed. I couldn't go to sleep without listening to Marvin. That was how I went to sleep every night. And how in the world did I go to high school? Did I go to school listening to Marvin Gaye in order to fall asleep, because I can't do that anymore because I don't fall asleep, you know? And that's, when you think about, that's hard to do, right? Like, you can't do that. You can't really, you can't really listen to Marvin Gaye to go to sleep. That's not what that's for. You know what I mean? But back in those teenage years like that, I could not go to sleep. And it's like, I couldn't let myself let go of consciousness without, like, I guess the very last sounds I was hearing being Marvin in my ear. And so my sister was very fully aware of that. She points out the way her daughter nowadays, her daughter's 15 now, so full on a teenager and about to be 16 next month, my goodness. And her daughter goes to bed the same way. She's like, yeah, she won't go to sleep. She's always got her headphones in. She won't go to sleep without her music. And so I can't do that nowadays. But so anyway, that was the way that I used to always drift off to sleep. And this one night in my dorm, this was the first time that I ever stumbled upon being able to tell you these 2 seconds, because I was doing it on a loop. And this is maybe a little bit too much. You know, maybe you're not going to be on this level with me. But I had my little portable CD player, and right, and there's the fast forward button, right, where you push it and you skip to the beginning of the next song, but if you hold it, now you're scrolling through the song. And there, for some reason, I got to this place where I was able to scroll and back scroll and scroll and back scroll. So I was like basically listening to this on a loop, and I was able to hear it as it was playing backwards. I'm going to the movie Sleepless in Seattle, where, and this is, everybody knows about this, but the little boy is in his room with his friend Jessica, right? And the dad has been looking for them, and then they're both snuggled up in this, in his little chair. They got his little portable record player in his lap, and the little boy says to his dad, "Dad, if you listen to this backwards, it says Paul is dead." And the dad's just looking at him, and he's like, "Yeah, I know." And the little boy's like, "How do you know?" It's just like that scene, right? Which, when we know what that's talking about. So, but that's where, like, this was the first time for myself that I had gotten to a place of being able to hear a song backwards, where it was just like, I would, and so literally, this, I'm telling you, this is probably way over the top, but I would listen from 341 to 343, and then I was rewinding it back to 341. And to hear from 343 backward to 341 is a sound as well, but all of it is heaven. Like, I'm sorry, you just have to, if there's a way that you could play that on a little loop that would just play it forward and then play it backward, and then, that 2 seconds is heaven. I need you to hear it. I can't break it down. You have to hear that. It's an audible experience. But that is the beginning of this thing that I'm telling you about, which, again, I promise you my words are not going to do this justice. And so based on that, I'm going to wrap this up to release you to go get to this portion of the song. But from minute 3:41 until 4 minutes into the song is where Marvin Gaye, for all of the years of his career up to this point, and I promise you, for all of the years of his career after that point, unleashes upon us, puts all that we can handle on us of what he has. And let me kind of explain it like this. Let me start out by explaining it like this. Multiple times from people that did know Marvin, worked with Marvin, I have heard that Marvin Gaye was almost a stinker as far as giving us his full strength in his gift. He didn't do it on record. He didn't record it. So we have 20 seconds, but the people that were able to be around Marvin witnessed it way more than we
have it for 20 seconds. And so, and kind of therefore that Marvin was a little bit of a stinker in that he didn't give it all to us. He didn't. He gave it, he let it go. I think he let go of himself. And for 20 seconds in this song, we have it. And this is it, folks. This is it. But like, he could have been in this all the time. That's what I'm saying. He was a stinker. He could have been in this all the time. We can't handle it. We can't handle this, okay? The world couldn't handle it. If you're on this episode with me from the first one, I'm breaking this. We're there. We're here, right? Like, I'm doing the fingers, eyes to eyes, my eyes to your eyes. We're here. Three minutes, 41 seconds until 4 minutes in that song is the 20 seconds that Marvin Gaye forgot. And just was in full power, and he unleashed it, and he did. He forgot to keep it contained, and he didn't. He didn't pull it back, and he didn't stop it. And we're hearing something that we never hear again. We haven't heard before, and it's just like, Marvin, why? Number one, why? You little stinker. You know what I mean? But it's all right, because you gave me this 20 seconds. I have absolutely no doubt. There's absolutely 100% not a question as to what is there that you don't share. You know what I mean? Because you let it go one time. You put all that I could handle. Like, my mind, my ears, my body, my soul, my psyche, my mentality, my emotions couldn't handle this all the time. I get it. Okay, I'm gonna take it, because I have this 20 seconds and I can easily, you know, be right in these 20 seconds anytime I need to. But it is what it is of Marvin Gaye. Okay, this is not a joke. It's not a joke. And this is the 20 seconds of life of Marvin, of really? Yeah. So I'm gonna let you go, because I really just need you, write this down. Minute 3 to 41 seconds to 3 to 43. That's just pure heaven. That's just a heavenly sound. It's just a sound from heaven. He let's go. I want to like say loses his mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just gone. He's gone. Let me put it like that. He's gone. Okay. He's in heaven. Cause he just listen to it. And then from 3:45 to 4 is just where we could not handle that again. Okay. So we don't get it again. But I think many people around him got it all the time, or whenever he felt like just being all the way in that. So save the children, an experience like none other, and the 20 seconds, that is all we could handle. Love ya. Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that's it for this episode. Did we have fun? I had fun. Subscribe to our show so you never miss the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye. And we're excited to announce that you can follow us on Pinterest at our page, pinterest.com/MarvinGaye_enduring_gifts. There, you can see our gorgeous picture boards for each podcast episode, among many others. These boards are full of images of Marvin capturing key moments from each episode. We're making this a listening and viewing experience for you. So until next time, thank you for listening.